back. It's Friday. We're a week into October already of this wretched year 2015, which I suspect will be remembered, a year to be remembered for decades and decades to come. If you're new to the show, my name is Henrik. Thank you for stopping by. This is Red Ice Radio with headquarters in Sweden, Northern Europe, and also on the North American continent. Well, beyond downloading and streaming our radio show from our website, redicecreations.com, you can also hear the first hour on SoundCloud, Stitcher, and TuneIn. You can subscribe manually in iTunes by clicking on the iTunes link from the website. Also, of course, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can follow us on Twitter, Google+, and Facebook. And hey, by the way, if you like what we do, please visit our Facebook page and give us a good review. We're trying to clean out some trolls lately stopping by, giving us bad reviews for the sake of it, from offended Muslims to upset lefties who basically can't handle the truth about what is happening in Europe right now. So thank you for helping us out, giving us a minute of your time. We really appreciate that. Well, today we're speaking with Marcus Folin from Sweden. He runs a YouTube channel called The Golden One. He mentioned in his bio that he's quite narcissistic. Well, his website is narcissus.se for one, but at the same time, he's trying to, basically inspire people to help us become more, to help bring those who are willing to work hard up to a new level, both by improving our bodies, but also our mind, and become the kind of Renaissance man that we need in this time of decadence and celebration of mediocrity. He's into physical fitness and strength training, but also politics and commentary from an alt-right perspective. We're going to spend some time today breaking down the latest in Sweden, the latest insanities, and then later in the second hour, we'll talk a bit more about the incursion into Syria by Russia, and we'll also talk more about physical fitness. Let's get started. Welcome, Marcus. Thank you so much for joining us. It's great to speak with you today. Hope you're doing well.
Thank you very much, Henrik. And it's a great honor for me to be on this show.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, you're active on a bunch of sites. You're involved in a lot of different things, from lifting to self-improvement and fitness and health, but also into politics, of course, nationalism and the critiquing and just commenting on the sad state of things, especially the situation we find ourselves in Europe at the moment. You make videos on politics and many other subjects as well. And I wanted to begin there first, and then maybe later we can talk a little bit more about the physical stuff, some of the training that you do, and talk a bit more generally about all the beta leftists out there. But a recurring theme for us on this show is to kind of tell our international audience about the insanity that is unfolding in Sweden. This also kind of gives our Swedish friends a chance to vent some of their desperate anger and also realize, of course, that they are not the ones who are insane, but those who are running our country are the ones who are insane. And of course, those who are cheering it on while the ship is being intentionally steered into an iceberg, pretty much. But with that in mind, I wanted to ask you a bit, I guess just a little bit generally about your background and how it was, for you to grow up in Sweden and kind of when you were you always minded in the way you are today? When did you kind of start getting your eye open to nationalism and identitarianism and these kinds of subjects?
Oh, yeah. Before I elaborate on my upbringing, I just have to chime in on one of the great merits of having an international audience, as I have. It is really easy to make legit points against the madness of Sweden, because in Sweden, a lot of people are conditioned to think it's even acceptable what is going on. But if you tell someone in an international audience, they will see straight away how much of a madhouse it is. But Swedes are being so brainwashed for so long, so they actually think that it's acceptable.
Yeah.
So that's a great benefit of having an international audience. It's so easy to take, to score political points in videos and podcasts and articles against the extreme cultural Marxist environment.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So yeah, that's, we share that common benefit.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So my upbringing, quite idyllic, I would say. Brought up north of Stockholm in the countryside, traditional family with a brother and, active youth, being out in the forest, playing, Playing football, doing sports, having lots of friends in the same age in the area, safe environment, and something that might actually differ between me and other nationalists is that I never experienced really the bad side of multiculturalism firsthand. So I actually went to every school I went to was majority Swedish still. And you're quite orderly in that sense. So my awakening, as it were, did not come in first hand experience, but more from the sense of a historical perspective, because I've always been interested in history. And if you look at it that kind of way, it's also very disturbing with what is going on. And that is what sparked my interest that, you know, we're basically giving our nation away. And in my context, I could just think about the mass immigration of Europeans to America. A lot of my heroes when growing up was Indians, like American Indians. Now, obviously, I don't focus on that so much anymore because that tends to be part of the white guilt narrative. But when I was younger and I kind of saw the same thing, here comes a lot of aggressive other people imposing their culture upon my land. So it didn't matter if I disliked them or liked them or anything of the sort. It was just wrong. And also growing up, I had a lot of heroes, like traditional epic heroes. And that kind of made it the obvious road to be a nationalist, to stand up for your people and your land.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, there's a lot of things that we can talk more about. I mean, I think obviously the majority of people in Sweden are, just as you say, they're myopic. They're so they have an inability to see the larger picture and see what this is going to lead to in the longer run, because most people still think we're helping these people. We're making the world a better place, and it's actually very difficult, I think, to reach these people and to make them understand. If they knew, to a certain extent, what we knew in terms of some of the establishment and the politicians and what they are actually, suggesting and talking about, when you begin to realize that they're seeking population replacement and these kinds of issues, I think most people would be against that. They wouldn't like the idea of being replaced in their own country. But it's like a communication error that we can't speak to them. They refuse to listen to our points because of the kind of the baggage that it comes with, right?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And also, unfortunately, the nationalist movement in Sweden has, if we look back 20 years to the 90s, a bit tainted by less respectable and less eloquent elements of the Swedish society that kind of hijacked all of those ideas. And that made it really easy for the Swedish media to just pin together guilt by association. Okay, so you're against massive immigration. That means you are a skinhead thug that goes around beating people up. And I think that whole image has been with the set of values for so long. Now obviously it's beginning to go away because more people are waking up. But even with the Sweden Democrats, they had that sort of those sort of arguments against the nationalist cause for a very long time. And of course, it's quite natural that regular people don't want to be associated with that sort of culture. And then of course they want to be the hip, modern, cool people with multicultural friends and be kind-hearted and addicted to being good and everything like that.
Yeah, it's true. It's been marketed to us the behavior, and it's been marketed to us that somehow caring for your own people or being concerned for the destiny of what's going to happen, there's a problem with that. That somehow that's a stance which is immoral, and that's really where the left has gained a lot of ground. I think that they've been turning their opinions into a virtue. They have the moral high ground. But if you ask me, that's not true. It's actually the opposite that's true. That if you realize you know, what is at stake here and what they're planning to do with the all populations of countries that have been built by Europeans, then that is the most sinister, immoral thing you can ever imagine, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's genocide, and one of the easiest rhetorical techniques you can use is just to switch it and say like, oh, you know, I would be just as opposed if Indonesia or Japan or whatever country got more or less invaded by a lot of people from whatever population. Because as long as it's not the white people who are becoming the targets, it's much more, you can pity non-whites. And if you take those examples and portray it to any sort of leftist, and then you, and then they say, oh, you know, that's horrible. And it was so horrible when the whites came to America, etc. And then you say, okay, but why isn't it immoral now when Europe is being colonized? The hypocrisy among the leftists are it's quite easy to take points at in my experience at least.
Well, you know, that means then that they inherently have inequality in their mind in the way that they view you know, whites or Europeans versus non-Europeans or non-whites, that somehow we need to be treated according to a different standard, that somehow we're different. Or, you know, I mean, I guess the way they spin it is that we are the perpetual oppressor, right? So we need to be lobbied against. We need to have political systems actively holding us down to kind of to level out this inequality, right?
Yeah, definitely. And the whole white guilt, and I suppose that's a common trend for the whole Western world. And if you go by the education plan of Swedish schools, for example, it is quite easy to understand why so many white, young Swedes harbor this sort of white guilt feelings, because all you're taught in school is colonization, the Holocaust, and the Crusades, and never talking anything about the slave trade commenced by the North Africans towards Northern Europeans, never really talking anything about Islamic aggression, never really talking anything about the terror bombing of Dresden or the Red Army's transgression in World War II, etc. So then you kind of realize that, okay, whites have only been evil the entire history, so maybe it's a good thing that they go away. So if you buy into the narrative and don't question it, I can understand why a lot of people, white people, harbor this this guilt, which they're desperately trying to get rid of.
Yeah, I know. It's really wicked when you begin to understand what's happening, because it is a conspiracy by omission, really, that they just keep certain things, out of the mainstream narrative and out of the history books and the school books overall. Which gives us this very, well, really then unfair and very biased view of history. We spoke about this before we started, you know, the aspect that we don't learn any history, basically, in Sweden. And I think it's true in many other countries as well, or it's very selective, at the very least, that it's pinpointed in such a way that it's designed to demoralize us, basically. So that, but that means in itself, inherently, that the establishment as we see it, they have a problem with European people, and they are seeking to target them specifically. I mean, how do you see that? Is that a concerted effort on the part of the political establishment and the elite? Is there an active thought behind that, or is this an accident? What do you think?
Oh yeah, no. I mean, that's obviously part of a larger context. The whole culture of white guilt and all this sort of bad emotions connected with the ancestry of Europe, and portraying nationalism not as a source of love for your own, but more as a motivator for hate and war. Yeah, you can look at the educational system, and I can't speak for any other nation in Sweden, but I would guess a fair deal that in French or American or English education that that the majority is guilt-based, that you should feel guilt in, you know, for the Second World War, for the Swedish, like one colony we have and like one Swedish slave ship. You're trying to spin something that can suit the whole Western world. You can also see the likeness of the Sami people with the American Indians. So they're trying to create this mold that they can fit all white people in. Say like, oh, Swedes, you were mean to the quote-unquote native population, the Samis, and
exactly.
The Americans was mean towards the Indians, and the New Zealanders were mean towards the Maoris. So, I mean, it's obviously something, a reoccurring theme within all white people, and everyone's supposed to be feel guilty for World War II, etc. So yes, it's quite obvious that it's not isolated cases.
Well, you know, it's absolutely ridiculous, but they actually are trying to pull that thing that, and saying basically, well, look at the labels they throw on it. It's we as Europeans are not indigenous to anywhere, right? We're not indigenous people, which is absolutely absurd. I mean, I looked at a map the other day. I do so quite regularly because it's just so fascinating, but of how looking at how the Romans mapped and tracked all these, you know, thousands upon thousands of various tribes all over Europe. You know, they traveled and they wrote down legends and they pinned down the different peoples and the small chieftains and kingdoms everywhere. And as I look at that map, you realize what a tremendous amount of people, you know, everywhere, all over the board, that have been absorbed into larger groups and larger, chieftains. And later, of course, these became nations. But my point is that whether we talk about the Samis or the Native Americans, these people don't have some kind of monopoly on suffering under being absorbed by a larger group. I mean, we all Europeans suffered from this. There are people that we don't even remember their names of anymore because they were absorbed and slaughtered and mass murdered, you know? And so it happened to all of us, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I thought another example regarding the indigenous people, something that also being used to suit all Westerners, and that is the case with Britain. Like Britain, the island of immigration or whatever, where they try to portray it as some sort of, you know, Iceland that has been subject to a lot of immigration, because they say like, oh, the Saxons came, the Vikings came, the Normans came. But actually, if you look at studies, most of the British people are still native Britons. So in the Irish case, it is not the case that they're Celtic, and in the British case, it's not the case that they're majority Saxon either. And that has been used previously, the island of immigration, to justify immigration from the third world. And that whole argument also turns the blind eye towards the fact that all of the previous immigrants were white Europeans. That you basically can't distinguish with eye, and the newcomers are, you know, straight out of Compton, and straight out of Jamaica at least.
Right.
I thought it was like an apt metaphor for the American case, the British case, and now the case with the Samis, that they are supposed to be the indigenous people.
Yeah, I mean they were. I mean, who knows what areas they had, but it's obvious that they were a more northern dwelling people.
Yeah.
That's obvious. And then you've had a lot of, I mean, yes, they were absorbed up in Sweden, but you know, as we talked about, so were the Goths, Jutta. They were absorbed by the Swedes. There were countless of tribes all over the place. I mean, there's names that go back thousands and thousands of years. And I think just because this happened more recently, that the Sami is a distinct tribe that we remember more recently due to the fact that geographically they were further north. But, you know, again, that's myopic. That's saying that that's the only thing that happened. We can argue whether it was right or whatnot, obviously, but there's no chance in you know, running a moral argument against Sweden or Swedes today on this level alone, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. And then one should keep in mind that even if the Samis were first up in Lapland, it was hardly the case that they were first in Götaland or Svealand.
No, that's right.
And I mean, that's the majority of where Sweden is. at least if you look from a civilization point of view, because Lapland is mostly wilderness either way. So
yeah, not a lot of people there. We dwell in the south, most of us anyway, so that's right. What do you think is preventing? I mean, let's talk a little bit more about, you know, Sweden, where things are heading right now with the current wave of the invasion that we're seeing from North Africa and the Middle East. And I mean, we've deconstructed this a few times on the show now, but I'd love to hear some more from your point of view as well, over the fact that most of the people that we're seeing coming in are not genuinely Syrians. We don't even know if they're Syrians, if they lack papers, etc. It's obvious when you look at some of the people too, that some of them are black. Some of them look more Asian. They're obviously from Afghanistan or other Asian countries as well. It's basically it's a free for all. The floodgates have opened and anyone who wants to come to Europe can now do so. That's right. That's really the situation we're faced with right now, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed. And I chose to see this as a blessing, actually, because this is so unsustainable, so that people will not have any choice at all but to either vote for, you know, Sweden Democrats, or if another alternative comes for 2018, or organize themselves. So I mean, this will push Swedes into action, and this action might, you know, create a better society for the future. So this is something big is happening, and that's basically my analysis. I'm trying to see the positive side of it, mm-hmm. Even though it's it's a catastrophic situation. But I don't think Swedes, when they see their standard of living begin to decrease, I think we'll see a lot more reactions.
Well, you know, it's a good point. I've been thinking about this a lot too, because we have a complacency among our people, which is highly, well, it's toxic. It's pathological. It's lethal. And you know, because you mentioned something earlier about the fact that we have foreign elements coming into our country, and they are, well, I wouldn't say that they are a stronger culture. They might be different. It might be more violent, actually, in many cases. This is experience that many people have. But the fact is that it's not a stronger culture anyway, because, I mean, these people are coming to us for something, right? They're seeking to go to a civilization and a society which has been overall more successful than theirs, right? And so they are coming to us to get something. So we could kind of get into a conversation really about if this is a stronger culture that's coming in, or if it's one that is lacking some of the elements that we have attained, if you will. But you know, getting on from that, the aspect is, of course, that our culture has been weakened as well. So our people has been weakened. So within that, you have kind of two different things that are happening at the same time, that they're coming to us, you know, for various reasons, because we have something they don't. And then at the same time, our culture has kind of been eroded. So how do you view that? How do you think that this is going to play out? I mean, are we going to be absorbed by Islam within 20 years, or is something else going to come out of this?
This is a really interesting question, and I've spent a lot of time thinking about it, and I don't have any clear answer, but to just throw out a few thoughts there, we can look at might makes right. It is of paramount importance for young Swedish guys to realize that our nation isn't, you know, given by God to us. We must fight for it as well. And right now, we are quite weak in comparison. We must be realistic. Most Swedish guys, okay, not most, but many Swedish guys still lack the courage to speak to their friends, to speak up at their workplace, to speak up at school, and just say, like, this is unsustainable. And a level of weakness that is so severe must go away before we can have any hope of winning. But if we can rekindle the Viking, the Goth in ourselves, then I think we can stand a good chance. But as it is right now, we're quite weak. We've been rich and sedentary for so long. And there comes, this massive hordes of angry and hungry young men from the Middle East that want our wealth. We'll see how it all turns out. But there's also many guys not all too pleased by this, obviously. So as far as I see it, it will be high testosterone Swedish guys versus high testosterone Middle Eastern guys,
mm-hmm.
and the rest of society will fall to whoever who is strongest.
That's what it comes down to, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And yeah. The historical example, obviously, is Rome against the Germanic tribes. I mean, the Romans were mighty and civilized, but they weren't strong enough. So that's a good lesson. You need to be strong, strong in the sense that you can actually, you know, go with a straight back and dare to talk about issues, because we still have a democracy. I mean, if we have, 2018 Sweden Democrats or an alternative party gets a lot of votes, we can still salvage this mess via democracy. But that also means that regular Swedish guys need to start talking openly, and that is strength for me to have the courage to speak up.
Yeah, I mean, what the crap, you know, if we don't even get to a point where we talk about this, nothing is ever going to get done. I mean, I know it's changing now, I know things are slowly being transformed, but for the longest time, literally, we have people cowering to the prospect of being called words, you know, and despite that these people might know what is at stake, basically, which is the future of our people, the future of our country. But okay, sure, there is a risk to these things. There are people, as we've seen, being absolutely, you know, hounded and persecuted, basically, for their beliefs. I don't know if you followed the story of Julius Caesar, you know, the writer?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good example, right, of insane. What happens.
Yeah. And the historical example there, obviously, is the infamous Swedish witch hunt. And people are too stupid to realize that we're doing it again, but this time towards people who have the wrong political ideas.
How tolerant, huh?
Yeah, exactly. It's disgraceful. And yeah. For anyone who doesn't know about the Swedish witch hunt during the 1600s, we kind of had a witch hunt. I don't really know what the criteria was to be seen as a witch, but they got burned at the stake, at least, for
That's
being
right.
different.
Yep.
And it's perhaps not as severe right now, but it's been the case that, you know, we become socially ostracized, can lose your job if you are too open about your thoughts.
But there must be a willing to take these risks as well from people.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it might be for everybody or what, et cetera. In some cases, I think it might be better for people to actually remain on the inside, if you will, wherever they are. They remain a closet nationalist, as I say, you know, because you might be in a position where you have some leverage, you have some influence, you could help things along later in the process. So it might not always be wise to be mouthy about these kinds of things. But the fact is that the climate has to change where people realize and understand that, you know, their opinions, that their oppressive, politically correct tyranny is like, that's needs to go, that needs to fail, and people have to speak up against that for that to begin to crumble away, you know?
Yeah, definitely, I agree. And one good example for, you know, a profession that might actually be more beneficial to be a closet nationalist is if people are working in the media. Because if you're working in the media in Sweden, and if you do not subscribe to the ultra-cultural Marxist agenda, you can basically kiss your job goodbye. But if you keep quiet about those thoughts, but still remain in the media, you can have a good position later on. So there is one example where I can see it being beneficial to be a bit more toned down with your political views, actually.
Yeah, yeah. How would you describe the climate to someone who kind of is looking in from the outside? I mean, we had, it's kind of, where do you begin, right? Because there's so many aspects to it. But just let me reiterate a recent example. Came out an article a couple of days ago. The bishop of the Swedish church in Sweden. I mean, that's a perfect example, right? She's a lesbian, you know, a lesbian in charge of the Swedish church. and basically advocating for removing crosses because it offends Muslim. And actually, more than that, she's going to install kind of a prayer space for Muslims in Swedish churches. I mean, where do you begin, you know?
Yeah, I think that's the best example that can illustrate the whole situation in Sweden. That really says it all, to be honest. That covers the whole gay rights side of things, gay pride, and also covers the total submission for Muslim demands. And the really hilarious thing here is that Islam and gay pride, they're hardly compatible with each other. And that's, for us, we can just lean back and watch the that battle unfold and see who will come out on top between the gay gay lobby and the Muslims. Because in the
butter up the popcorn, folks. Yeah.
Oh yeah, exactly. And spectate that. And obviously, in the cultural Marxist train of thought, only white straight men can be evil. So they don't want to acknowledge the fact that Muslims can be evil as well.
Oh God! Yeah, we have this parade, of course, through a Muslim primarily Muslim area gay parade, and it's kind of like I kind of hearken it a little bit to what's going on with the cuckservative meme, you know, in America, in terms of that these are like they're trying to use kind of the suppression of one group against another. It's kind of like they're trying to use the victim hierarchy against itself, which, you know, okay, granted, it might wake some people up to see how absurd it is, but still, it's hardly the strong position to take, is it?
No. But it's quite hilarious being who's the biggest victim. It's quite fun to...
Yeah.
Totally unworthy for a prideful man, though. A stand-up... a straight-backed man to take. Never be a victim.
Exactly. So give us your idea of how things are going to play out here. I mean, are we looking at a full-on basically conflict here? Where's this going to lead? Because we are, as you say, maybe we can talk some more about that in terms of the fact that we are very complacent. We're sedentary. We are not moving around. We have these office jobs. Most people in Sweden, it's a service economy as opposed to a production economy. Which unfortunately makes people sit most in front of the desk as opposed to actually moving around a little bit at least. So there has to be a change in attitude of a realization from our point of view that if things get, you know, messy here, basically, we have to be in a position physically to be able to cope with that. And as things currently are, that's out of the question almost.
Yeah, definitely. Swedish men are not in the best position right now, because with the exception of licensed hunters, we don't really have any weapons, whereas criminals can get weapon quite easily, because that's that's what they do, they have weapons. And then also the sort of individualism that many Swedish people still harbor, every man for himself, whereas the Middle Easterners have more of a tribalist sense. I remember that's one thing I remember from my upbringing, that if you had a beef with an immigrant, you knew his 50 cousins were going to be there to back him up.
Yeah.
And that is an incredible asset for any group to have, that they stick with a group, and that if you mess with one of them, you will get the whole tribe on you. And that is something I would like to see Swedish guys realize as well, that, you know, we are becoming outnumbered. I saw that Tino Sandai said that in an article on Fria Tider that Swedes could be a minority by 2025. And then Swedes have to realize that either we stick together or we're doomed, because a single person can only do so much. But if we network, get into groups, form groups around the country, then we're in a better position. So that's one thing I wish for. And then that, you know, the Swede in general becomes a bit tougher, because right now we're quite infamous for being not the most masculine of men anymore.
Well, not everyone, of course, is like that. But generally, I think it was. I think Sweden was voted the most feminine place on earth.
But with that said, to any international listener that hears this, I mean, there are a lot of Swedes with high capacity. And if we look historically and genetically speaking, I mean, Swedes are a people of high capacity.
Absolutely.
No question about that at all. And if we can rekindle the Viking or the Carolean, we stand a good chance. And then I don't see anything that can stop us, actually, if we can just reach that.
That's just it, isn't it? Because... we don't even realize that this is a fight. We don't even realize that there actually are people sitting down in Turkey doing TV shows about how great it is when they're going to become a majority in Europe and take it over. We don't understand that, to not everyone, but to many people who come in, this is an aspect of, granting and seizing this land in the name of Allah, that this is a religious... I mean, we're so far removed from those kinds of things that it's difficult for us to... put ourselves in that headspace, and therefore we kind of pretend that it doesn't happen or it's not real, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's very easy to escape it all, to just go to work, go home. Sure, you see some beggars and see some immigrants on the way, way from work and home from work. But it's quite easy still to close your eyes to it. Because you still have, you can go into the store and buy exactly what you want to eat. You go home, the electricity is still working, everything is quite smooth. So, I mean, you can close your eyes still to it.
We have to be pushed out of the comfort zone, right?
Exactly, exactly. And the comfort zone, fortunately for us in the national opposition, it shrinks for the common Swede all the time. More things are happening each day that pushes people out of the comfort zone to the point where there is it isn't an option anymore to escape it via video games and Netflix and staying in all night. So that will be the spark, I think, that more things are happening all the time until the
we're kind of forced really into this situation. This was the case for me anyway, Marcus, because I was not doing shows about these kinds of topics all the time. It was something that literally came to my doorstep, and I realized that, wait a minute, something is drastically changing here. Something is, our demographics is being threatened. We have openly politicians in Europe talking about, displacing white European people. They literally... want to mix us out. They want to make sure that we are no longer a majority in our own countries. And when you take all these things combined, it's like, my God, it's like there is a slow genocide occurring. And if we don't speak up about this, if we don't face this head on, it's going to be over for us,
Yeah, definitely. Same here. When I started my YouTube channel, for example, it was mainly training related, but I realized that I can't sit and talk about deadlifts and bench press when there is an invasion going on, where I know for a fact that unless things change, Swedes will be in a minority in 10 years. And if you say that, Swedes will be in a minority in 10 years, it's not that distant, actually. It's 10 years. That's not much time. And I think no Swede, no matter how indoctrinated, would want their daughters to be brought up in a Sweden where Swedes are a minority. Yeah. Because we know right now, Sweden is not a place for a woman. That's just how it is. Yeah. I would not let my girlfriend go out in Stockholm at night. No chance of that.
Not Gothenburg. Certainly not Malmö.
certainly not Malmö. Yeah. Whereas here in Ireland, for example, I have no problem with her. She can go in the middle of the night, go through a town. There will be no danger whatsoever. Okay, perhaps not no danger, but it's a completely different political landscape.
Really? I heard it's getting pretty bad over there. I mean, we linked up an article a while back as well talking about that the Irish will be a minority in their own country also in about like 20 years or something.
Okay, no, Dublin is the exception.
Okay.
That's the exception. But what happened was that there was a lot of immigrants coming to Ireland as long as the Celtic Tiger was in full swing. But then when the financial crash of 2008, a lot of them went back because there were no work and no benefits to be had. So Ireland was blessed, so to speak, with the financial crash, actually.
Interesting.
In that regard. However, I'm talking about the minor cities and in societies here. Dublin is a completely different matter because then that's quite separated from the other Irish
place.
But it's a completely different society than Sweden, actually, in terms of the segregation and everything like that. Because you won't see an aggressive gang of Middle Easterners standing in. I haven't seen it anytime I've been here.
Right. Well, I can link to that article for you folks who want to read it. It was from IrishCentral.com claiming that the Irish will be an ethnic minority by 2050. So, 25 more years than what they've given us in Sweden? So that's good. That's great. Well, thank you. 15 more years. Excellent.
You can see it if you look at younger school classes, etc. It's quite many Africans, etc. So I can definitely see that the upcoming generation will be a lot less Irish than it is.
Absolutely horrible. We'll get into the demographics question later. There's many more things there I want to ask you about. But let's just return to a point that you mentioned. Back at Sweden again, and we have a situation where we are very, very isolated. We're highly atomized, that some people say, or individualized. We are.
Yeah.
It's bizarre because we're so collectivist, and it's a highly conformed society. But yet within that, we are like hyper individualized, and it's super difficult to actually reach out to people and to, you know, make new friends and things like this. It's very, for some reason, I don't know what has happened or what the mentality is like behind this. It's obvious that this has not always been the case. I think it's something that came with the kind of socialism that we've had in Sweden for many years. I don't know. What's your take on that?
It's a very good and interesting question. And I don't really have a solid answer towards that paradox. But what I could say is that if you live in a city, which more people have done successively over the decades, you kind of lost the sense of community like you had in the old village systems, and a lot of people obviously living in cities go to work, have their colleagues, go back to their apartment. Don't really have to spend all too much time doing anything with other people, basically. So I'd say that perhaps could be more of a city phenomenon. And the exception maybe would be sport clubs where young men gather to in a tribe-like fashion. But just for the regular Swede, I have no real solution to that problem.
I think it's the same thing there, right? We just have to start turning that boat around and start talking with each other, start getting to know people. I mean, we're in the process of building a social network, of course, in together with what we're doing here with the radio show and everything here, to try to help connect people wherever they are. It doesn't matter if they're in Sweden or not, but basically, you know, have some kind of map where people can add their pseudonym or the real name, whatever they're comfortable with, and show that, you know, they're there and they have an interest. Because I think really what's going to solve this is, just as you say, it's to build that network to kind of get back into that tribal sense and the definitely. Brotherhood again, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's all about tribalism, brotherhood, networking. And one of the things I think Swedish guys are doing really well is perhaps we're a bit cold when it comes to, you know, city life and everything like that. But when a group of Swedish guys come together as a tribe, as a brotherhood, then they have tremendous capacity. So that is, if we can ignite that as well, you know, a lot of groups of high testosterone Viking tribes Then we're on to something, I'd say, actually.
I believe you're right. Now, we're going to take a break in a little bit here. We have much more to discuss. As I said, I do want to get into the, you know, the demographics question, you know, with you, how you see things there. There's just so many things going on. I want to ask you a little bit more about, of course, the health aspect of getting fit and getting even motivated to get fit and all those kinds of things. So you, I think you have a lot of good tips and whatnot there. But let's just kind of talk a bit about your websites a bit first before we take a break, so people, you know where to go to find out, you know, how they can follow you, your work. I know you have a bunch of videos out there. Do you have any other things? I think you offer some kind of consultation and stuff, right? Tell us more about that.
I do online coaching, actually, and it's narcissus.se/online coaching, all information there. And then YouTube is my, that's my main thing, actually. So make YouTube videos, try to make one every day, you know, focusing on, the main focus would probably be on self-improvement, and then I do some pure political videos, a lot of philosophical videos, training videos, a bit of everything, actually. And so that's the golden one at YouTube. And then same thing on Facebook. Facebook, I try to share, you know, relevant news, put up some articles once in a while, and, you know, provoke some discussion, etc. But YouTube would be the main thing. So and more political videos coming out as well.
All right, very good. Did if you did more kind of body work first, if you will, lifting and whatnot, and these kinds of issues, when you started going over a little bit more to the political stuff, was that welcomed? Was that, were people agreeing with you, or were they like, "Oh my God, you're a racist"?
I had a few such comments. But my channel is now almost at 20,000 subscribers. This time last year, it was about 7,000, something like that. So people are appreciating it. And the transition period was quite smooth indeed, because if you talk about training philosophy, you go into philosophy in general, you know, will to power, and, you know, gathering inspiration from epic heroes, wanting to take personal responsibility for what is happening to your life. And all of those philosophical thoughts go quite well into preserving modern Europe and to be a nationalist, that you're proud of yourself, you're proud of your family, your tribe, your nation. You stand up for yourself. You stand up for your nation. So I tried to make the transition period go from training philosophy to politics, and then mix it up in, so it's a common theme. You want to be a big, strong Viking nationalist. You do not want to be a submissive, estrogen beta leftist. So I tried to portray like the two different camps. You can choose whichever you want. Either you're a, you know, muscular hero, or you are an effeminate beta, basically.
Yep. Kind of what it boils down to at this stage, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's so easy to make fun of the leftists, because they look so weak. They look so weak and pathetic. And then, you know, with the whole fat acceptance movement, because fat acceptance in my world is, you know, cultural Marxism given form.
Yeah.
Fat acceptance. Yeah. And on the other side, you have Aristotle and, you know, physical perfection. So the whole debate with nationalism versus cultural Marxism, it goes into training as well. So the transition went along those lines, actually.
Well, you know, it has to be a level of, you know, something that people are attracted to within this as well. And I mean, let's just face it, are people going to be attracted to fat blobs that decided to do nothing about it because they're lazy and just, you know, try to justify their bad behavior, or people who actually are, you know, are trying to take care of themselves and do something that, you know, that it's self-evident. They're trying to change this fundamental aspect of human nature and what we're attracted to, who we look up to and all these kinds of things. But the fact is that's, it's never going to change, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I must just thank the whole fat acceptance movement, because they're pushing people away from the left. Same thing as the gay lobby are pushing people away from those sort of ideas as well, because they are so strange, they are so out of touch with reality, and they're so unattractive. So people do not want to be a fat blob feminist. They don't want to be associated with feminism, because the picture, the image that conjures up in your mind when you hear feminist, for me, that is a very fat girl, basically.
Yeah. It's like someone said, it's like, you know, I understand feminism. Not everybody can be attractive.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And
yeah, but it's bizarre. The point is that it's turned into these movements have turned into very bizarre, self-hating, despite the fact that they say it's about loving yourself. But in reality, yeah. Health-wise, that's really dangerous too. I mean, it's bad for you to be that fat. I mean, and this is not being told. So it's turning into this very bizarre thing that they're using politically they're using one group that is especially protected, to break down a group which is not protected. And I think people will see through that kind of insincerity after a while and get sick and fed up with it. But all right, we're going to take a break here, folks, in a little bit. The websites that Marcus mentioned, we're going to have linked up. He also writes a bit for writeon.net, which is Daniel Fridberg's latest endeavor, if you will. We'll have that linked up as well. Of course, a YouTube channel, and also narcissist.se for his personal website. All right, well, stay with us. Marcus, stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back after a short break. Second hour coming up with Marcus Folin. You can join us at redicemembers.com. Sign up for membership with us. It's only €5 per month. We'll speak more about NATO and Serbia as an example of what could happen in Europe on a larger scale. We speak about the Sweden Democrats, what kind of politics they run, and what the prospects are for them to get in next. We talk about weapons, training, and the prospects of civil war in Sweden. Already we're seeing hand grenades going off in what someone called Sweden's third city, Malmö. AK-47s and other weapons are showing up on our streets, gang war between fighting factions, all kinds of, you know, spicy, enriching, and new exciting things that we haven't seen in Sweden before. And of course, this is leading us to a position where we have to provide and pay for police enforcement and security in an attempt to preserve the peace between these fighting groups. We talk about low birth rates in Sweden, and that if the trends continue, we'll be a minority in Sweden by 2025. There is a large portion of good men that are able and capable in Sweden that you simply don't hear about. And we discuss some of the strengths that Swedes possess once we begin to form groups, organize, come together, and of course, realize what is at stake and what this is really about. And later we speak about Russia's incursion into Syria and what is happening there. We also get some insight into some of Marcus' training and what he recommends for people who are seeking to improve their strength and to bulk up. So don't miss it. Sign up for a 3-month subscription, but why not a 6 months or 1 year or 2 years? Support independent media. Support those that are talking about the really important issues that others refuse to touch. These are the kinds of issues that are affecting us the most and is the most immediate. If we ever are to focus on other really important topics by now, we can't just stick our heads in the sand and think that this is going to blow over or go away. It's not going to. If you're interested in space travel, exploration, environmentalism, animal welfare, any kind of science and learning and philosophy, Western tradition, be they spiritual or esoteric, you know, all of this will go out the window due to the conditions that we are creating now with civil war in our countries. So if you care about civilization, trust, and peace, this is the number one topic for you at this stage. Maybe you just don't realize it yet, but I hope you do, and I hope you understand the severity of it and why we keep talking about this. Thank you for listening. Please join us in the second hour at redicemembers.com. Before we proceed, upcoming, we have Tanstaffel, Vox Day, we have Lars Holgerholm, Daniel Friberg, James Lancia, and also Jay Widener coming up a bit later. All right, folks, we'll see you on the other side. Thank you.